Greetings, kindred witches. Welcome to the Atomic Hearth for this Sunday Haven.
Here we share our experiences as we build a modern-day inclusive witchcraft practice rooted in nature's seasons, celestial cycles, and the science of energy.
Join us as we build a practice that learns from our past, is rooted in our present, and works toward building a better future, all while connecting deeply to the earth and sky around us.
Let us begin a new era of witchcraft. Hi, everyone. Welcome to our growth here at the Atomic Hearth.
As always, we are so grateful for this community and for all of you for choosing to spend a portion of yourself here with us.
We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge that we are currently here on the lands of the Coast Salish peoples, more specifically, the Duwamish and Muckleshoot tribes. We want to take a moment here to honor the ancestors of the land on which we reside. Thank you.
Good moon witches, let's talk seasons, lunar tides, and celestial happenings. No matter your location, we are all approaching a full moon, the final one before the equinox. This final full moon before the shift offers unique potential, one final round, so to speak. For those in the southern hemisphere, this is the last full moon before the energy starts to tilt into a release phase. Energy might start to feel a bit soggy or saturated, but the cool hint of autumn and winter should be riding the wind soon, bringing in that crisp hint of what is to come. This full moon offers time for taking stock of what the harvest season brought in, sharing the bounty, relishing in the gratitude, and understanding how the gifts can nurture us through the coming release and dark seasons. Consider it a metaphorical and spiritual stock up of the pantry before winter. For those of us in the northern hemisphere, the season is tilting towards the spring thaw. We just saw one last cold snap up here in the Pacific Northwest, but the birds are singing in the spring despite it all. This full moon is about getting that vision board created, not just digitally or in draft form, but physically creating a representation of your goals for this season, final form. It doesn't have to be a vision board, but creating a tactile object helps prep the ground for the seeds of attraction or growth that we may hope to plant at the turning of the equinox. Lunar tides be with you.
Welcome back and welcome to At the Hearth. Today, we're talking all about attraction spells.
Last time, we provided an overview of attraction magic, a growth magic used to attract things to us, such as money, a new job, a new place to live, and love, to give a few common examples. We did so by asking and exploring some big questions, like, is attraction the same thing as manifestation? What key elements and themes are found in all kinds of attraction spells? And what do I do when things aren't working and I need to reset? And in chatting things through, getting specific with your intent, bringing energy to match what you're attracting, being careful of instant spells, and the so underappreciated value of doing the practical work all came through as keys to keep in mind. That's, of course, the briefest of summaries. So to get all the good stuff we covered, you can check out our last episode.
Yeah, we covered a lot last Haven, but a couple of things that we didn't really get into are like the science and pseudoscience behind attraction magic. I know there's always a lot of talk about like the law of attraction, and I was curious what your thoughts are, Ash, on the science of this and of attraction magic.
You are right. The law of attraction is a very popular theory in many New Age and witchcraft circles. The main theory going around these days involves two concepts. First, the observer effect. And this is by merely paying attention or observing something, you can impact it. And the second is the quantum concepts of like attracts like, that we can just think things into existence to attract it. And these are definitely some pseudoscience thoughts, some that are pretty interesting. But then, as I started to dig more into the actual science behind the observer effect, I found out that there is a misconception happening here. In science, to observe generally means to measure, which means that there's some sort of measuring apparatus involved. Think like a thermometer or some sort of gauge. In science, this observer effect states that by measuring something and introducing the measuring tool, you automatically alter what you are measuring. So, easy example here. Tire pressure for like your car, your bike. You're going to go and unscrew the cap and you're going to put on a meter. And, you want to measure the pressure that's in the tire. But then when you put the tool on it, it releases some of that pressure and changes the amount of air in the tire. So this alters the very thing you were trying to measure. Now, this is a very simple explanation of something that's happening on an atomic level, but hopefully you kind of get the idea. A good example of where science and New Age philosophy kind of get their wires crossed a bit. Now, instead, if you strictly think about the law of attraction as we attract what energy we put out, that is probably got a little bit more science behind it, but maybe not what you think. So frequency bias can play a big role here. Think of when you buy a new shirt and you start to see it everywhere. Did you attract the shirt, or is your mind opening up to the patterns around you? If we open up to the patterns around us, it becomes much easier to see opportunity that puts those things into our sphere of influence. A little chicken egg there. Did you first attract the shirt, or did you first see the pattern? Ah, yes, spicy psychology. Where I'm currently very curious is the exploration of the human magnetic field and the vibration we give and receive through that energy, and how that impacts the world around us. Consider that each human is a magnet with a magnetic field, much like the Earth. Our body has two poles that circulate energy between our top and bottom energy centers. This circulating energy creates a sphere of electrically charged energy around us. And this part is actually observed science. We know we have this electrical field, we can measure it, we've seen it interact with things. In fact, we also know that the energy is altered based on our emotions and wellness, a key element to understanding how our energy affects our spell work. So a neat trick of this in action, if you hug someone for more than 30 seconds and your heartbeats come into sync, your electromagnetic fields come into coherence or match each other. The wavelengths line up. This also happens to groups when they listen to the same music together, even more when they're making the music together. Then the idea is if your energy hums with happiness and it's a strong frequency, you might be able to hug someone and bring their energy into that happiness frequency. Super cool stuff. So then curiosity asks, can these magnetic fields also interact with other objects? Especially ones with their own fields. We know that magnetic fields have unique frequency. A frequency just like all form of energy is measured in waves, like light and sound. If I can generate a specific frequency, can I bring nearby electrons into coherence with that frequency as we do with each other? So for instance, if you change the vibration of one molecule, you can then impact nearby molecules, creating a chain reaction. Okay. So then let's say if we pair this with practical steps, it essentially turns any red lights on our path green, clearing the pathway towards our goal. This does mean you have to attract kind of locally within your sphere of influence. You know, you have to be able to have a path to that goal. So trying to attract a house that is financially out of reach, like a mansion on the other side of the world, none of those elements are in your sphere of influence, or at least currently. So they're probably not going to work. But to get energy molecules at a certain frequency, first we have to put ourselves at that frequency and generate energy from that state. Generating energy looks like words, movement, song, even thoughts. If we have the intent to bring in money, but our frequency is that of defeat, that is the energy waves we're sending out into the world. That's not going to bring you what you're looking for, necessarily. It might in fact bring you other things. Now let's say we want to tie this into charm work and we want to use a charm to kind of have the same frequency. Then we're essentially amplifying our magnetic field by including that additional field to boost the impact on the atoms around us in one wave format or another. Okay, so that was a lot of science there. Pause. Digest. And in summary, law of attraction works, but probably not in the way you think. And the energy you generate has a wavelength or vibration that impacts the world around you. Okay, And since we're on the topic of magnetic fields, I would be remiss not to point out the influence of the sun's 11-year solar cycle on our personal fields. Solar flares that hit our atmosphere cause static in the frequencies, enough so that it can disrupt satellites and radio frequencies. While most of this is filtered through our atmosphere, it too has subtle pulls on our personal magnetic fields, much like the moon influences the salt and water in our bodies. We might hear folks talking about other influences from portals or astrological gateways, and honestly, I just checked to see if there's been a solar flare recently. In fact, a few witch communities have been sharing struggles lately, many around physical well-being, and lo and behold, this past Friday was a rather large solar flare.
So along the lines of molecules and material impact, I'd like to dig a little more into the physical here. As you mentioned charms, how do I make a charm? How do I use a physical charm? What are some good or even best materials or techniques, especially for those like myself without a natural talent for crafting much of anything?
Well, I want to start by saying that charms are not limited to attraction magic by any means. So you can use them in a variety of ways. However, commonly we see like luck or money or love charms, which do in some way work with attraction magic. It is also important to say that charms are very cultural as they show up in various forms, but many have similar elements. So involving physical representation or charged objects. You know, there's often a small portable container or final item of sort. Think satchels, jewelry, and other small items. Consider that many charms are made to be destroyed or lost when they have fulfilled their duty. I think one of my favorite charms to gift is a friendship bracelet style charm, braiding together color choices based on what I'm looking to work or attract for that person. And they wear it until it falls off or has been lost and the charm has run its course. One way to start to select a material specific to the energy of the charm that you're wanting to create. So you, let's say this charm is for love and you want something that brings that feeling to your body. So you're going to, you know, select whatever item you have that creates and matches that frequency you feel when you are in love. And this often means following your own gut instincts instead of a list for things like color or stones and gemstones and crystals. So, you know, I think it's really up to you to decide what works for you. And so it's also, you know, when you're looking at stones and crystals, they have some natural elements to them that you can look for as well. So for instance, the difference in composition structure between a crystal and a gemstone, same for the geode. I also encourage folks to look into the rock or stone category that actually have really potent energies, especially if you think of how they were formed over, is it a product of time or pressure or heat or erosion, right? Those are all other elements interacting with that particular frequency. So they also carry something very specific to them. And then other times for a charm, you might choose to use items that are essentially vessels that hold whatever energy you want to store. Quartz crystal is probably the most common stone used for that purpose. The key is that no matter which method you use to charge the items, including a physical action that impacts the energy around it is really important. So for instance, with the friendship bracelet, I'm focusing on the intent while I braid it. I'm probably also saying it aloud. And it has to be a pretty focused intent since, you know, braiding is a bit of a smaller action, pair it with the words. So I might amplify that with humming, even tapping. Using musical instruments, you know, these are all ways to raise that energy around your charm as you infuse it with that like vibrational energy. So to replenish the charm, you know, you simply recharge it, repeating that same action.
Yeah. And like you're talking about like crystals, herbs, et cetera, I find them all super useful in charms and just spells in general. And I'll often like suit the items that I'm using to the magic that I'm weaving. But since we're talking about attraction spells, it would be remiss not to mention like the power of magnets and using them in your spell work and in your charms. I mean, they're literally charged with attracting energy. So including magnets on your altar while you're doing spells or into a charm, or it's just a great tool and it works for any kind of flavor of attraction magic, whether it's love, money, housing, etc. Just having that extra oomph energy bring brought in is fantastic. But when it comes to specific attraction spells like love, et cetera, I do sort of pick and choose my objects that I use and infuse very carefully. So for love, example, very, very popular kind of attraction magic. I might use a rose quartz to work with, which is a super classic example of a love charge crystal, or a garnet if I want a little bit more oomph and sort of like a little bit of a spicier magic. And then I could also include like a fresh rose on my altar as I'm doing my spells, or if I'm making a charm, maybe include dried rose petals or wear rose scents throughout the day to day, anything that kind of connects me back to that sort of energy. And then I'd also like, if I'm doing spell work at my altar, I'll choose like a red or a pink candle. For money, it's all about the green for me. You know, I use green candles, adventurine as my crystal, mint for my herb. And because, you know, mint is naturally a very abundant herb. Anyone who's had mint take over a garden knows how prolific it is. So having that prosperous energy, backing the energy that you're putting into your magic, just really adds a great boost. And then for housing attraction spells, I find that like clarity is my sort of focus and the energy that I want to include as I'm doing that work. So for me, I work with like amethysts or purple candles, and I include rosemary in my housing work because, you know, it is said to bring good fortune into a home, and many places I have lived in my life and including my current house, have rosemary in the garden. So I just associate that with home. Now, these are just a few items that can be used in attraction charms and spells, but there's a lot of resources out there that list so many more options. And honestly, at the end of the day, kind of depends on how you feel about the items you're choosing. Not everyone will feel the same way about certain crystals or herbs, etc. Maybe you associate rose quartz with someone you find really irritating, or the smell of mint makes you nauseous, or you just don't feel a connection with the color purple. Use what works for you and what you're called to. There's no rules about what has to go with what type of spells. And that brings me to the subject of like pre-built spell kits that you see often for sale online. They're really fun and some people get some great use for them, but honestly, I don't really use them. They can be expensive and may include items that you don't want to work with, or maybe missing items that you actually really want. Besides, someone else's energy went into making these kits, and that's not necessarily energy you want in your work. I say it's best practice to just kind of collect the items yourself.
Totally. And that's a lot of good ideas there, but it does raise another question on my mind, which is what if because of where I'm at in my life right now, maybe I'm traveling a lot, maybe finances are a challenge. What if it's particularly challenging to find or buy specific items, specific crystals, specific candles, colors of things? What if the store is out of the color candle I want, which I feel like is always the case for me? Do I have to include any physical charm in my attraction spells? Do I need stuff to make this work?
You definitely don't need stuff. I'm going to say that again. Like, you definitely don't need stuff. I mean, at this point in my practice, the use of items is a bit limited. I incorporate them when I really need help focusing my intent or getting my frequency in the exact right spot. But there's definitely a deeper layer to the practice that can be done without the need for anything but ourselves. I think ultimately that's one of the most beautiful things about witchcraft. It lives inside of us. The tools we need to touch and see the pattern of energy that surrounds us are all just within us. So as for attractions, magic, and spells, they also do not need to include a charm. That is just one way to approach things. But spells and rituals for attraction might combine many elements. That doesn't mean that more is more here. In fact, less is probably the way to go. And by this, I mean, don't inundate your spell with tools. You don't need the candle, the crystal, the herb, the sigil, you know, like by this, I mean, like just pick one that is the most potent of all, if you pick any at all. All right. We've talked a lot about concept, but let's get into spell specific. And since love was in the air this week with Valentine's Day here in the US, let's start with love spells and actually first stop self-love spells.
So important when wanting to work love magic, self-love spells. So while love spells are oftentimes, you know, most popular about like attracting a romantic relationship, starting with love magic first, I find is key. I have found that in order to, for me personally, like I to attract like a deep love connection with another person, I really had to do the work on myself first. When I was in my early mid-20s and trying to date, I was so focused on things like outside of myself and what other people thought of me. Am I attractive to other people? But I neglected that like self-care and self-focus. So the energy always just got kind of dispersed. And the relationships I attracted just never fit. It wasn't quite right. So one time after a breakup, I finally chose to like focus on myself and loving myself instead of seeking someone else to do that for me. I built up my own confidence, paid myself compliments, took myself on dates and long walks on the beach, and bought myself presents once in a while. I found that by like giving myself that energy, I was then able to attract it in from someone else, tying back to that sort of like quote unquote law of attraction conversation. And that someone else that I ended up attracting in, I am currently married to. So, hey, you could say it worked out in the end. I also found that by focusing on self-love, I ended up clarifying what type of romantic love I actually wanted to attract rather than what I thought I wanted. I was able to sort of get out of my own head with it in a little bit. And that allowed for this sort of, oh no, this is what I want in a partner, not this other thing moment to happen for me. Now, I will admit that self-love can be one of the hardest things to work on. And believe me, I am not perfect at it. It is still something I work on and struggle with from time to time. But one of my favorite quick self-love spells I do, and that it is super easy and it's like you can integrate it into your daily morning practice, is just really great. So here's what I do. I put on like a favorite song. And if you have the time, maybe like light some favorite incense of yours, just like surround yourself with stuff that makes you feel good. And you stand in front of a mirror and say a list of things, at least 10 things out loud that you like or love about yourself. Now, this doesn't have to be physical attributes. I know that that can be a sticky point for some folks, including myself, but this can be like how well you cook or how good you are with animals or the sound of your laugh, etc. I found that in doing this, I just automatically start thinking better of myself. And then in this repetition and doing this, it's sort of that like subliminal reprogramming. And it's a great example of how spells are like that spicy psychology, you know. But once you've got your self-love down, then we can move on to attracting others.
Ah, yes, love spells and the perils of free will. There are definitely a lot of camps out there on this and a lot of should and shouldn'ts that get tossed around. I'm just going to say my general thought is to do what aligns with your values and morals, and a reminder that magic and manipulation are oft bedfellows, so tread lightly there. Most often I see folks seeking love spells to make someone love them, and if they do get what they want, I rarely see that end well. So take that or leave that advice. On the flip side, maybe you just want to attract a certain someone based on traits you desire in a partner that they also possess. If it's meant to be, you've created a clear path for that relationship to develop energetically. The key here is to focus on the traits you desire. You know, last time we joked about the movie Practical Magic and the spell she creates so that she never falls in love. If you haven't seen it, she lists traits that no one could possess. And plucks flowers as she does so. And the structure of that spell is very sound and practical. Gathering flower petals and pieces of plants based on their attributes or meaning to you, stating the trait as it's placed into an offering bowl, good stuff. Another approach, and perhaps a personal favorite, is to write love letters to someone with the traits you want to attract. In the letter, describe a day together or tell them all the things you love about them and why. Seal and mail the letter back to yourself. Leave it unopened until the spell manifests. The action alone puts something out into the world, only to bring it back to you. Then, of course, there is love and attraction magic for those already in relationships who might want to rejuvenate things a bit or celebrate time together or do attraction work together on a mutual goal. Consensual adult relationships can generate a lot of energy to work with. And I'm just going to leave it at that. So, of course, the infamous duo, love and
money. I've got a money spell that I've worked a few times and that I'm quite fond of. And once again, this is one of those spells that you don't need a lot of stuff for. You just need a couple of key items. So what I do is I print out a copy of a bank statement, and not like a blank template, not like something generic you find on Google, your bank statement. This is where that specificity comes in that we talked about last time. and then write the number in the balance section that you want to see in your account. It can be, you can put this number above the number that's currently there, or you can do like plus a number, say, i.e. I want an additional $1,000. You would write plus $1,000. Don't cross out your current balance on this statement. You don't want to accidentally rid yourself of that number first. This is where that be careful what you wish for comes in. And then every morning, spend time with this bank statement and visualize the current numbers ticking up to the desired number. I like to imagine it almost like what you would see on like a game show or a casino, something real fun and flashy, like the numbers just rolling up and it's exciting and it's celebratory, and like just really build that positive vibe around money, especially if you find that you have a hard time with money. Now, a slight alternative to this could be like you want to get paid something specific for a gig or for your art or a project that you're working on. You would write yourself a check with the amount that you want to attract. And then once again, go through that visualization process of like getting that check, depositing into your account, watching that those numbers tick up in your bank statement, et cetera, et cetera. It's real simple. It's easy. You create a visualization that you do every morning. You don't need a lot of supplies. Of course, crystals and things can be added to add that boost. But yeah, Ash, I know that you approach money magics just a little bit differently than I do.
I do, but I do love this bank statement idea. I use this concept a lot in other types of spell work, but for money, there's always been something very potent to me about using coins. So for this, I'm actually fortunate to have a piece of money that has sentimental meaning, the first dollar I ever made in the film industry. It's a cased gold-plated coin given to me by my first mentor. But before that gift, I would use like a $2 bill that I had come across at some point, something unique. And I do love $2 bills for these for spell works. But the point is if you have money that's meaningful, include it in this process. Maybe it's the first dollar you made at your Etsy store, or you know, maybe the first dollar you saved after not being able to save for a long time. And you can always go like just pull a dollar bill from the bank in a symbolic gesture. Totally okay. Anyways, I start with one coin. I charge it and put it on my altar. Then as the days goes by, I either take coins I have found, because often I will just come across coins on the ground, or I'll pull one from like my wallet, and I'll begin to stack the coins one atop each other on top of my altar. Each time I add to the stack, I visualize my money flow increasing. And then this is the other key element to this, and this part always amazes me. The most potent thing I have had work for me is the magic of giving. In this case, it's about giving when I really don't have anything to give. Whether it's a dollar or $2, it seems to jumpstart the money wheel, so to speak. And what I give tends to roll its way back to me with a little bit more oomph. It might show up as a refund on something or a discount on something I have to buy. It starts to show up in little ways and eventually bigger ways. Now, I will say this, I have noticed that the impact is not the same giving digitally. So it's really about that money exchanging hands in that act of giving. I also want to reiterate here that practical steps are key, especially with something as cultural and tactile as money. This means look at both how you receive money and how you spend it. Ask for that raise, go for that higher paying job, but also budget and cut back on things maybe you don't need. Money is tricky, especially since many of us were not taught personal finance in school. So I highly recommend the book Financial Feminist. It's a great starting point for some of those really good practical tips from somebody who's got some experience. Okay, we have the love of our life. We have some money, but what about our jobs?
Ooh, I've got a good one for this. Similar to my money spell, I like to use physical objects. So I take an updated, first of all, you got to do the work. You got to update your resume if you want to get a new job. You know, you can't just have a resume from a decade ago. Go ahead, refresh your resume, update it, and print it out. And then you take said resume and on it, you write the attributes that you want in a job that you're trying to attract. So this can include like your salary, what kind of projects you'll be working on, the kinds of people you'll want to work with, the environment you want to work in, et cetera, all things that are important to you in a job, and get specific here. Then spend some time in the morning and do a visualization around this job that you're trying to attract. So imagine yourself going through the interview process, meeting this person, talking to them. Then getting the job and feel that excitement around like the welcome to the team email or like the handshake handshake congratulations moment, like really visualize that, really feel that excitement. And then imagine working there. What's the day-to-day like? What does that feel like? So create a visualization that you can really just sort of wash, rinse, repeat every morning and like get up, make a part of your morning routine, and spend a few moments at your altar with this resume and go through that visualization over and over again. Of course, while doing the practical steps of networking, job searching, etc. Turn on your LinkedIn notifications, you know. I'm starting to get a little bit of deja vu when it comes to like these spells.
Yeah, at this point, you probably just sense there's a pattern in spell structure. You know, you take an item that's unique to you, you charge it with your intentions and desires, you generate energy that gets the intent into the world, and then continuously revisit that energy until the spell manifests, you know. And houses are no different. As old school as it is, I find that like a tactile house listing from a newspaper or rental company is really the best foundation to start. The rental section of the newspaper is my prime go-to for this. And if you're looking to move somewhere new for a house, you will want the newspaper from that city if you can, which I know, fun and tricky, but in our modern world, I know you can do it. From there, write on the newspaper sheet everything you desire in a house. I like to use a thick marker so it's clear and bold. This might be like the physical attributes, but also think about what you want to generate in that house. You know, safety, home, family, independence, freedom. Home means a lot of different things to everyone. So figure out what that is for you and make sure you include that, you know, so it's not just like, oh, well, I want a pool and I want a fireplace, you know, just sure, list those things, list the necessities, right? How many bedrooms do you need? You know, need it to have a, you know, for me, it's really important that it has a dishwasher, those kinds of things. And that's like a accessibility thing for me. So then it's about creating a visualization or mini movie of what living in that house would be, both the physical and the feelings. I'll say in my experience, I'm more likely to end up with a house that feels right than one that necessarily has all the gadgets and gizmos. But that being said, I always end up with the things that I need, just not necessarily all the ones. Like I want a fireplace, but for disability reasons, I need a dishwasher. You know, and be open to what manifests, but it's okay to have standards too. If you're finding that things just aren't showing up the way you expected, you might revisit the spell to make sure it's the right level of specific. Words matter.
So many great ideas. Man. Okay. To help pull all this together, in, I know in my own brain, and I know we talked a lot about like daily practices, but just like starting from scratch, my inner project manager would love a little good order of operations here. So would one or both of you walk through, you know, from day one, a sort of a general spell layout to think about?
Yeah, I know. A lot of content here. So yes, let's talk about spell structure, but I do think it's important first to differentiate between spells and rituals, since they're actually different but intertwined. So spells, at least in my book, are a bit like prayers. You want to be able to kind of do them from anywhere. Now, I know if a candle is part of a spell, that's a little less likely, but they're still generally smaller in scale, say, than a ritual. Now, rituals are generally more in depth and raise greater energy. They include the spell work, but go a bit above and beyond that. So I might do a spring equinox ritual to plan my intents for the season. And this might be the first time I do that spell. And this might be the time where I actually include like a candle or the kind of tools that, you know, are kind of once you use it, they're gone. Or I might start the candle spell. And then after that ritual at sunrise, I would repeat that spell every day. Maybe I would light my candle a little bit. It has snippets of the energy. And, you know, if I use music or anything like that, I will bring that from the ritual into the spell. But it won't be the full thing, right? It'll just be a snippet. Then each full moon, I refresh that bigger ritual energy by doing a full moon ritual that contains that longer version of the spell. Then lastly, as I hit the solstice, I do one final big energy boost with that solstice energy, hoping that whatever hasn't taken seed will then. Which means I will be doing a larger spell casting on the equinox to start the process and ride the tides of that good seasonal energy. Then at full moons, I'll give big pushes in using that lunar energy. Then on the daily to give small pushes using solar energy of day to day. And to wrap it all up on the solstice, one more ritual for that final push with that seasonal energy. I know it sounds like a lot of work, and it is. I'll be honest, many people think magic is easy. Spend 5 minutes, get results. that's not the case, which is why seasonal rest is so important. So after the solstice, it's about receiving and letting that stuff come in until the next equinox, right? That gives me two main spellcasting seasons, one from the spring equinox to the summer solstice, and then another from the fall equinox to the winter solstice. I definitely might cast spells in the other seasons. I just know that I don't have that like full force of seasonal energy behind me, so that it may take longer or fizzle out. Okay, so let's step through an attraction spell from like step one. So first thing, decide what it is you would like to attract into our life. Many times we need the house, the job, the love all at once, and we don't know where to start with which to attract first. And truly, this comes down to some like personal reflection. What's most important to you right now? What change would have the biggest impact? I like to think about the areas of my life and then kind of rate them a bit on a satisfaction scale. Highly satisfied? Don't fix what's broken, what isn't broken. Not satisfied? Sounds like a great starting point for some attraction work. Now, you could try to go for them all, but the energy will get a bit diluted, so keep that in mind. Let's say, out of the job, the house, and love, I decide to go for the job because it will have the greatest impact and may help with the other two. You know, a new job may mean more money flow for a different housing situation, and it means meeting new people, which never hurts in the love arena. Okay, so job it is. Now, first things first, some practical things. Like Alyssa said, make that resume. Then start writing down the things you want in a job, not the things you don't want. Be careful with your word choice here and be specific. List the hours you'd like to work, the amount of money you'd like to make, describe the vibe and the people you want to work with. This is also about being clear on the nice to haves and the must haves. It's nice to have your own office, but is it a must? Make this list on like a scrap paper for now. And next, if you want to incorporate tools such as crystals, gems, herbs, etc., this is the time to gather them, cleanse them, prep them for use. This is also where I might plan my full moon ritual with this spell as the main attraction. This could also be an equinox. Based on timing, if I can align it with that, then that would be my first choice. If not, then I go for like the next coming full moon. And if not, then, you know, a morning energy that works well. And just like any ritual, I would, you know, cast my circle or spiral, call my energy into from the space, and then set to work on the spell. So I have my tools with me. I have my scrap list with my what I would want for a job, and I have my resume, and I'm taking that with me into my ritual, right? And so during my ritual, I would then start, you know, with the casting or conjuring of the spell. First, I would write my list of desires onto a printed copy of my finished resume, right? So I'm going to take that list and transfer it onto my resume using a marker. So it's big and bold. Writing over the printed text, filling the page, drawing sigils if I am including them. And then as I do this, I'm also charging my tools and using them in the appropriate manner, i.e. light the candle. This is also where I might combine them together to make a charm to use after the ritual is complete. The order here is really personal and spell specific, so I go with what feels right. You know, next is about giving energy to the intent and putting some action behind it. This is so important. Many people will do the visualization and not give energy to it. So you've got to find some sort of action that goes with this. And this might be a chant. It might be singing, playing an instrument, humming, tapping, dancing, drawing, anything that creates kinetic energy or vibrations. I like to wrap my spell work with a as I will, or so mote it be, or something along those lines. So raise that energy, right? Let it out into the world, and then you can close it. And after that, of course, you'll want to ground and center, returning your excess energy back to nature so that it can, you know, feed the birds and trees. And you just wrap up your ritual per custom for you. And then for attraction magic, I like to reinforce that spell work with the morning growth energy. So the morning following the ritual, I then repeat the visualization and energy racing portion, but like on a smaller scale. I generally spend like 5 or 10 minutes here. So if I did a big song for the ritual, this might just be a snippet to reminder of that like frequency as I start my day. The key is then that after my ritual is done, the spell work continues each day, not just with the morning spell work, but also the practical steps. So you're setting all the green lights for the day in the morning, and then you're taking those practical steps to step through those intersections throughout the day. you know, get that resume out into the world, continue to train and learn, apply for jobs, do whatever you can to keep the actual energy going into that intent. You know, you're not going to get a job if you're not applying for them, right? And interviewing and taking those steps. And that includes following up, et cetera, right? Those are all practical parts. And then, you know, when the next full moon rolls around, I look back at my ritual, I make adjustments as needed, and then that becomes my ritual for that lunar tide. And again, at the solstice, I will do one last big push. After that, I only continue with the daily practice if it's needed, but often by that point, it's clear whether something will manifest or not. You know, little pushes aren't going to bring in big fish.
Well, I know we covered a lot, but I do have one general extra question maybe to get things started, which is, it's not super tied to attraction magic, but it's kind of a tie to all magic. We do throw around a lot of sciencey terms here, talking about molecules and atoms and atomic level of things and solar astronomical terms like solar flares. Any favorite resources or advice to go to, if especially if this like just really isn't something, you know, maybe you learned about it so long ago, it's just not fresh at all. And in your adult life, it's just, it's maybe not instinctive. You're not in school in science class to just like pick this up, you know, tomorrow.
Yeah, I admit this is where a big bit of due diligence comes in. And I want to just reiterate that, you know, I'm on the journey along with all of you. So no degree in science, but grew up a bit of a science geek. So it's always intrigued me and has largely been a sticking point in my spirituality. So it's something that I'm constantly coming up against. And as I've gotten older and spent more time with learning it, it gets a little easier to get a sense of what's reasonable and what's not. You know, there's a lot of pseudo and woo-woo science out there, so it's important to take a minute and check the sources of what you're reading. Do a little research on the author. Really, I think Sarah Lines does a great job describing the CARS method created by Dr. Robert Harris, which helps assess credibility of online sources. So I highly recommend checking out her book, How to Study Magic by Sarah Lines. It covers many great topics. However, let me kind of break down the CARS concept real quick. So credibility, you know, you check the author's credibility. How does this person know what they know? Accuracy, how accurate is the information you receive? And yes, this gets harder if you aren't an expert or knowledgeable in the field, but some good things to look at are, when was this published? Do they list sources? Are those sources accurate? Does this person seem to have bias? You know, and as far as basic science stuff, you can really, that stuff is pretty non-controversial. So you can find some really basic science stuff to help you build the basis of information to get a sense for accuracy. Reasonableness, which with witchcraft, this one is a bit difficult, but this is going to largely come down to a gut and personal values check. As Sarah mentions, having a good bullshit meter is really key and something you can develop over time. So getting on with CARS, so we just did credibility, accuracy, reasonableness, and now we're to support. Support is how the person is, you know, how are they supporting the ideas they put out there? Are there other folks who can support this claim, especially ones with high credibility? Is there evidence of their claim? So CARS, credibility, accuracy, reasonableness, and support. So this method is a great way to assess source material, whether it's science or spiritual, especially even if it's from another culture. So all this to say, when it comes to science, are we a science podcast with a high CARS score? No. We are a witchcraft podcast with a measure of CARS based on our experience and time within the craft. I always encourage you to do your own research, do the gut check, and have a bullshit meter. But ultimately, it's also okay to believe in something. And it's also okay to admit that we learned something new that changes the way we think. Sorry, that wasn't as much actual resources as methods. A couple of books that are interesting to me currently both have, you know, maybe medium CARS score books, CARS scores in my book, though. So I would definitely approach all pseudoscience with skepticism. But the two books I'm reading right now are Becoming Supernatural by Dr. Joe Dispenza, and one that I have enjoyed in the past and got some great information out of was Electric Body, Electric Health by Eileen McCusick. I do want to note that many of these authors also have a strong doubt of modern medicine, which is complicated, but not something I endorse.
I will say for specifically for space science and like what's happening in space, if you want to integrate that into your practice or just kind of be aware of what's going on and how it may impact your energies, one of my absolute favorite websites is spaceweather.com. it has not changed in format since the early 2000s. And I have been subscribed to their newsletter since I had my very first email address. It's honestly like, it'll have like daily, like solar flares, what's happening with coronal mass ejections, which planets are in alignment right now, like lots and lots of fun stuff. So if you're like feeling, oh, like extra energy right now, or like extra impact, or maybe you're feeling sluggish, like pop on there and see what's happening in space right now. It's honestly, it's really funny how often it lines up with what I'm feeling.
Oh, really good. Yes, love spaceweather.com. If it was to me, that would have been my primary resource reference too, but love the book references too as well, Ash. Well, we've spent a lot of lovely time here together covering so much information. So if you have any questions after the episode, we're going to move along here. But if you have any else that come to mind afterwards, of course, don't ever hesitate to reach out to us afterwards, post questions via social, just let us know what questions you have.
As we wrap here today, let us take a moment to affirm our covenant as witch and stewards of this planet we call home.
If we listen carefully, we can hear it deep within. The hum as it turns, in tune with the cycles of seasons and life. The turning of the cosmic wheel. After darkness comes dawn, and after the day, sunset lays the world to rest. We honor this cycle, this ebb and flow, beginnings and endings, of birth and death, and the path of which as we walk along the wheel. Weavers of magic and manifestation.
As which, we walk the wheel as stewards of nature, honoring and manifesting a cyclical balance. To the roots and bones upon which we stand, we give gratitude to that which came before.
As which, we walk the wheel as a gatherer of community for this place we call Earth and for all the creatures and beings which call this planet home. We offer a safe, inclusive space.
As which, we walk the wheel as keepers of wisdom, knowledge, and story. By honoring history, learning, and making meaning, we carry forward the wisdom of those who came before.
As which, we walk the wheel as bridge builders, finding shared visions of a more aware and sustainable future.
As which, we walk the wheel as weavers to know thyself and the energies around us. Through presence and attention, we shape and grow our craft.
And so the wheel turns, and whether we feel its impact today, whether joy or sorrow, there will be a day when we too feel the turning, the circle of life.
For we are all children of the trees and the stars. We are witch.
With the permission of our ancestors and blessing of our children, may the magic we raise weave a way forward.
So mote it be. Mote it be.
Hey, kindred witches, thank you for bringing your magic to this grove and gathering here at the Atomic Hearth for today's Sunday Haven.
We look forward to coming together for our next Sunday Haven, currently planned for Sunday, March 10th, so 3 weeks out instead of our usual two. Seattle folks, join us March 16th in person. More details coming soon.
And as always, what makes Atomic Witchcraft thrive is all of you. So please join us again. Engage us with your questions and thoughts anytime, and consider tossing a coin to your witches if you're able.